The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A strong finish to a strong quarter. New attacks on the independence of the Fed. Bonds rally and yields plunge. And are politics messing with your psyche? We'll talk about this, all this, and much more on episode number 606 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. A very good day to you. How you doing? This is your favorite podcast host, your financial podcast host, Andrew Horowitz. I'm the founder and president of Horowitz & Company, a financial services firm, and we focus on investments for individuals and businesses. So if you're looking for a financial advisor, we're ready to help. If you want us to review your portfolio, we do that, no charge. So just head over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and you can go over to the Ask Andrew section and ask away, and I will be happy to provide you some insights, or just email me at info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Now, there are lots of comments this week on Twitter about last week's podcast guest, Ross Gerber. And you need to make sure to listen to that. That was a pretty interesting discussion. He's very bullish on a lot of the areas of the markets, but uber, super, incredibly bullish on Tesla. And he has a lot to say about that, a lot of insight. He talks about Apple and a few other names. So that was last week's episode, episode number 606. No, 605. This is 606. 605 of the podcast series. And we've been doing this since, I think, 2007. I think it was the first attempt was 2007. And I got to tell you, since then, I've learned so much about the area of podcasting and audio and all. And I'm just going to tell you something. This week, what happened? We had a flood in our office that is a real problem in one of the offices in the back. And my podcast rig pretty much blew up. I walked in the office one day and there was this smell of like electrical burning or something. And I put on my headphones. We were going to get ready to do a podcast. And there was this horrible hissing going on. Terrible noise. I said, what is that? Maybe it's a setting. So I started messing with the settings a little bit. No, that's not it. Yeah. Turns out, it was really hot. Something must have just exploded inside of one of my mixers. So I went out and got another one. That wasn't good. I got a replacement. Not good. So I'm working with one right now. I'm not thrilled with it, but we will use it temporarily. In the process, I found something really, really cool. And anybody out there is an aspiring podcaster, and you're like, well, what mics do I get? How do I set it up? What do I do? The equipment. There is a new device on the market called, I think it's called the Rodecaster Pro. Rodecaster Pro. And you can't get it right now because it's out of stock everywhere. But if you can get your hands on this thing, for those of you that are interested in podcasting, it pretty much makes podcasting easy as can be. And I called around town and I'm getting one, I think, next Tuesday or Wednesday. And this device has everything you need. I mean, it does things like mix minus, which is a problem sometimes of trying to figure that out. It does four separate mic inputs. It also has USB output, separates track for multi-track recording. It has four separate headset outputs plus two other main outputs. I mean, I'm like, wow. When I saw this, I'm like, oh, man. If I could have designed something for podcasting instead of having all this stuff that I got going on here between my this preamp one and preamp two and this other, man, this is awesome. So I'm going to get my hands on it. Hopefully it's going to sound good. Hopefully it's going to have decent sound and we're going to be able to work with it. But I have a feeling there's some really cool things on there. So just a little quick note for anybody who's interested in the area of, you know, doing your own podcast. So let's see. We have this flooding going on. I told you about that. All right. How about we do a little recap of the markets and talk about what's going on? Of course, the markets did cooperate really nicely into the end of the month and the end of the quarter. So March is in the books. The first quarter is now in the books. What an incredible rally we saw on the markets on the heels of just some real nastiness. Just 2 months before, 3 months before. So the S&P is up 13% for the year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 11% for the year. Small caps up 14%. Emerging markets up 10%. The NASDAQ 100 is up 16%. I mean, if we stop right there, just say, okay, that's it. You got the NASDAQ up 16%. You got the Dow and S&P up 10%, 12%. That's it. That's a good year. That's it. Let's just put it in the books right now. And I bet you there's going to be a good amount of hedge funds and other places that actually look to bank some of those profits soon. But nonetheless, it was a pretty incredible rally that we saw. A turn on the dime change in sentiment from what we saw just at the end of 2018. And then like a light switch went on. 2019 started to rally dramatically, and a couple of blips here and there, but generally speaking, it has been a pretty good ride. And not only are indices up, but there's an incredible amount of performance for individual securities that is just mind-blowing. I mean, just incredible moves. But what I wanted to talk about was some lessons that we can probably all learn from the recent action that we see in the markets. And a lot of you have written to me and you said, you know, I pulled out my money in November or December. I couldn't take it anymore. And then so many people said, you know, when do I get back in? And a lot of people talking about how, wow, you know, in the end of January, markets are overvalued again. And, you know, what do I do at this point? I wanted to go through some of the things that I'm seeing here and some of the lessons that maybe we all can incorporate into the process when we're thinking about exactly what happened over the last two quarters. And I'm specifically talking about the last two quarters. And the reason for this is that during that period of time, during the last 3 months of 2018 and the first 3 months of 2019, there were some things that happened there that were pretty interesting. And depending on how you read those, how you utilized your process, that your own specific process, or if you don't have one, it will really show what the outcome was over that period. So the first thing is, let's start with the first lesson. Again, specifically related to the last 6 months. And the first one is don't fight the Fed. And you've heard about this probably 100 times. And you've seen it on TV. You've seen it in the newspapers. Don't fight the Fed. And let's talk about this in the context of what the pundits have been saying through the end of last year and into this year. And last year we saw that there were so many believers that low interest rates were the key to markets, and that was in the beginning of the year, and said, you know, rates are going up, but they're still low. And for historical times beyond that, going back a number of years, everybody said, you know, listen, the Fed is being very, very dovish. They're being accommodative. And with that in mind, stock valuations can really move higher, et cetera. Once that turned and the Fed started increasing rates and increasing them more rapidly, all of a sudden those same pundits turned around and said, you know, while a low interest rate environment is really good and very helpful and supportive of stock prices, you know, what we have found is that when interest rates start going up, it's a really good time to be invested in stocks. So in other words, let's just take it from there and parse that out. When interest rates are going down, it's good for stocks. When interest rates are going up, it's good for stocks. That's the information and the education you get from the pundits, from watching TV, from listening to what they have to say, from reading. It seems that, well, it's a good time to be in stocks no matter what happens. Okay. Now, if you're in it for the long haul, if you're a buy and hold kind of investor, and pretty much you pick a stock and you're going to hold it for a very long period of time, doesn't matter. But for those of you that are more swing traders or looking to invest a little bit more actively, of course it matters. As we got into the end of the year, a lot of these were trying to peddle the idea that high rates mean a better economy. It was much more bullish. And they didn't get off that soapbox. But as we saw towards the end of the year, you can't have it both ways. You can't have it where on one hand, you want to believe that don't fight the Fed if the Fed is benefiting you, but don't fight the Fed but fight the Fed if it's going in the other direction. In other words, don't fight the Fed as interest rates are coming down, but fight the Fed if the interest rates are going up. Total BS. And you could see what happened at the end of the year when the realization was that the Fed was going to continue tightening and the impact on the economy and on stocks was going to be dramatic. What happened? Stocks sold off in a big way. So this first idea of don't fight the Fed is very important. There are some caveats here. Because as you know, this whole idea that the Fed was moving rates down was very good, but you have to look at where they are in that cycle. We'll talk about that in a second. The second lesson, which tags on the first one, is don't listen to the bullshit of the pundits that are always bullish. They were right initially, and they could be right for some time, but they were wrong in the end. Here's the thing. Rates going higher can kill a market, as we saw at the end of 2018. We know that, right? And the reason for this is that there's a choking point that when rates will move high enough, they'll start to squeeze out economic activity. And that's what it's supposed to do. The whole point of raising rates is to slow down the economy, slow down inflation, get things back to normal so it doesn't overheat. But the pundits that are trying to give you this information and always one-sided are not at all to be, listen to it for the incremental information they're providing, but not something to be relied on as investment advice by any means. So your first lesson is don't fight the Fed. The second lesson, which talks about why that is, and then we get into the pundits. Second lesson, don't listen to the pundits, especially those that are always bullish. And remember something. We've had many guests on this show that have talked about when they're invited on various shows, CNBC, etc. If they say anything negative, they're not invited back. So what does that tell you? If you have a negative opinion, you're probably not going to be on these shows very often, and therefore the shows will always lean towards the more bullish side of the equation. Not every show on every channel on every time slot is like this, but generally speaking, they want to have upbeat and really positive, energetic, and the outlook is good versus people on that are going to say anything that is really negative. Our third lesson here about the last 6 months is that the Fed has no idea what's going on. Think about this. They're no better than any economist who, to be fair, aren't very good to begin with. Economists are the weathermen of finance, the weather people of finance. And the Fed is made up of economists and people from academia, as well as supposed experts in the world of finance. But they're not all-knowing. They make policy mistakes. They've made many policy mistakes since I've been around. I've been doing this for about, 25, 30 years, and I got to tell you, they make a lot of policy mistakes. And what they do is they overcorrect their mistakes, and they're often, those overcorrections are often kindling for market rallies and the water that douses them. So you can see that they overcorrected by keeping rates as, very low for very long. And then what they had to do was they created an incredible rally, the potential for a bubble, and they started to raise rates, and they did it and overcorrected already too much. The real mistake was not that they moved rates up too much. The real policy mistake that I saw was they put it on automatic pilot. They put the whole process on, yep, we're going to be pretty much raising rates 4 times next year. That's all there is to it. The Fed has made a secondary mistake, in my opinion, when they backed off it and in their last discussion about rates didn't raise rates. That's not the mistake. The mistake was saying that they're not going to raise rates for the rest of the year because it infers, again, that they're on autopilot, not reading the economic tea leaves, and more importantly, the underlying idea there is that there really is going to be a significant slowdown through the entire year. Now, you don't want to project that to markets. You want to keep a carrot out in front of, I mean, if I was a Fed official and if I had the desire to be the cheerleader for the markets and the economy, what I would do is I would always hold a carrot out in front of the investors and the markets. It's very much like what's going on with the China trade deal. There is a constant carrot being put up in front. Friday, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, 6:30 a.m., tweets out that trade talks are very constructive with China. They went back to the table and they started talking again, getting closer supposedly to some kind of deal. We don't know the details, but the carrot was out there and markets reacted. You keep this carrot out there just in front of the nose, not too far into the future, and you keep running after it. The carrot keeps on making things roll. And the Fed, by taking away the carrot in the first place last year and saying that they were going to automatically keep raising interest rates because the economy is really strong, then backing off, which was fine, saying they were going to be much more reactive to the economic data points, that was fine. But the secondary policy mistake that we're going to see becomes a problem, I believe, is that they said they're not going to have any further rate increases through the end of the year. Because now any change in that is going to come as a surprise. In addition, people are going to worry about what is the Fed so concerned about? What do they see? What are we not seeing? Because the belief is that the Fed is a lot smarter and has a lot more data than everybody else, in advance of everybody else. And therefore, it makes them smarter and it makes them have greater visibility of what's going on. So it's my take that the third lesson that we have to learn from this last 6 months is that the Fed has no idea what's going on. So a quick recap. Lesson one, don't fight the Fed. Lesson two, don't listen to the bullshit of the pundits. Lesson three, the Fed has no idea what's going on. Lesson four, don't panic. The move that we saw in November and December, it was pretty dramatic. And of course, it's dramatic to the downside. You know, the move that we saw in January, February, March, pretty dramatic also, but everybody's happy. But when we talk about losing money, it's a whole different discussion. And people, investors, you, others, advisors, tend to get really concerned when they're losing money, right? I mean, it makes sense. So if you had this moment of panic and you pulled all your money out at the lows, you probably lost out because you probably wouldn't have been able to be disciplined enough to figure out that, okay, if I pull out here, but I'm wrong, this is going to happen. And there was probably no real good signal because we went up in a straight line. Therefore, there was not much time to really allow you to really create a plan. So if you panicked out, you may not have panicked back in. And the lesson on that is also that this timing, full in and full out of the market, is very, very difficult. It's next to impossible. Now, you should have noticed the signs that something was wrong in October. Maybe a little bit earlier in the year, you could have been lightening up on some of the positions you had, keeping some dry powder, you know, to deploy towards times when maybe markets started moving lower. Possibly when you saw that capitulation point in December, that was relatively easy to see. Of course, afterwards, it's even easier to see when you look back. But during the time, that December 24th market low, even though it was a half day, even though it wasn't a tremendous amount of volume, that move was a pretty much a very clear capitulation low. So if you look at that and study that chart and look at what happened and recall that day and a few days leading up to that and kind of circle that, print it, put it on the side and watch for that in the future. That doesn't mean, let me put a couple of caveats here. That doesn't mean that that was the time that was perfect to buy in and just hold on to it forever, because we don't know what the next kind of correction is going to look like or feel like. But that one was really weird. We had this big lead up into the concern about an inverted yield curve, and we had this concern about rates going higher, and we had a concern about the economy slowing down and earnings guidance and warnings that were going to slow down precipitously in the first quarter, and tariffs that were going to be continually added, and it was going to be another batch of tariffs added at the beginning of the year. All this came to one giant mess at the end of December. So you shouldn't panic. You should have a plan in place. You should do your homework to look at, you know, what do these things look like? And with that, this is a kind of a side note here. Maybe don't be so greedy. Take some profits when it's time to take some profits. When you see things are getting pretty hot, like right now, it looks pretty hot right now, the markets. It looks like we are seeing every possible great outcome priced into the markets right now. Earnings doing better, not an earnings recession, no recession, the Fed staying on hold, possibly even reducing rates, tariffs coming off, and everything just being hunky-dory. When, by the way, the information that we're seeing does not confirm that. So we have one of those situations, again, that if you think about it, you could say, you know, been a pretty good run here for the last few months. Maybe I'll take a couple of bucks and put it on the side. And that leads us into our fifth lesson. Markets don't go up in a straight line. I can say that if you look back historically and you look at a long-term trend, just kind of put a weekly chart back to, I don't care, 25, 30 years. Over a long period of time, markets generally have the trend and the proclivity to move higher, to move up. However, it's not a constant, right? They move up. The longer term you look, the longer those candles or those bars are that you look at, the more they are generally moving higher. Now, there's obviously some blips. Back in 2007, back in 87, back in 2001 through 2002, there's a variety of times that we see that there are blips. But again, you kind of keep on stretching that out into the future. Generally speaking, markets have a tendency to move higher. There's a lot of reasons for that. There's a good amount of what I would call mechanics that are involved to help push markets higher over time. And as a matter of fact, I'm writing about this in the next quarterly commentary that we put out. So the Horowitz & Company quarterly commentary that's coming out probably, I would say, in 2 weeks, if all goes well, should be. We have some of it written already, is about, the main piece is going to be about market mechanics. And you really want to probably read that because it gives you, I think, some really good insight into how markets are setting up these days and why markets have like this buy the dip mentality and why after a major move down, we saw this major move up. It's mechanics. Don't forget also, companies have a vested interest in keeping their stock price up for a lot of different reasons. Whether it's the currency they use to buy other companies, whether it's that, well, a lot of the employees have stocks in that as well. The company itself has a vested interest. So one of the things you want to do here is find companies that have long-term earnings and revenue growth histories. Because when markets don't continue to move higher, if you can have a company with a really solid history, it probably will be sold off less than a company that does not. And then, of course, look at valuations and look at all the other things that go into the fundamental analysis. But then also, let me give you one side note caveat, and that's this. When markets go down, everything goes down. 80% of a stock's move can be attributable to a market move. 80%, approximately, of a stock's move can be attributable to the markets, the direction, the trend, and the movement of the markets. Therefore, as we have more and more people investing in ETFs, where we have the ability for one-shot block trade into an entire index, if you ever wonder why things are moving up, why when that really bad day for Boeing and it took down the Dow Jones by itself about 300 points, why at the end of the day the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up? Because the other stocks in the index were doing their thing. So companies have a vested interest here. Markets don't go up in a straight line. And then when markets are moving down, which is natural, it's uncomfortable, don't forget that you could use hedging strategies in your portfolio or even pull back some of the profits. So again, fifth lesson, markets don't go up in a straight line. They have the tendency to go up over time. So depending on how close you're sitting to your screen, depending on what time interval you're looking at your charts, will tell a much different story to different people. You know, imagine you're sitting by your computer and you're watching the minute-by-minute, tick-by-tick action of the markets. And you look at that and you're staring at it all day. It goes initially up a few points, down 100 points, up 100 points, down 200 points, back to even, up 100 points, finishes flat for the day. You would be sitting there saying, wow, that was, whoa, look at that, it was a pretty good move today, huh? Wow. Interesting. A lot of volatility in there, a lot of action. I'm not sure what that means, but maybe it's bullish, maybe it's bearish. I don't know, but a lot of action, lots of things going on. Take somebody else who is on a plane overnight going to Asia. They're sleeping. They wake up the next day. They look at the markets. Ah, markets are flat. Not much action. Right? All depends on what you're looking at and how closely. I will tell you, if you want to be a good investor, sit back a little bit from the screen. If you're day trading, fine. But if you're trading on a longer term basis or investing for the long haul, sit back a little bit. Extend the bars. Don't look at the 5-minute bars. Look at the daily bars. Look at the weekly bars. Even look at the monthly bars. So we have five lessons that I think we could learn from what's happened recently in the last 6 months. And what does that say where we are now, and what can we do with some of these looking forward? And what's going on now is that we have a Fed that has turned tail dovish. And it's probably due to a couple of different things. One of the things is the horrendous fiscal policy mess that's being put on pressure on the economy here in and around the world, here and around the world. And frankly, no end in sight for bad policy-making decisions, even though, yeah, you want to throw up the flag and hooray, we have this tax deal. That was great. That was good, at least for corporations. For our fiscal, for a general fiscal situation with tax receipts and with a ballooning deficit and debt that's, you know, enormous, highest national debt that we've ever had, not so good. So the Fed probably is a little bit more dovish due to the global situation, pressure that they're seeing on that, the fiscal policy trying to come in between and right the ship a little bit in the balance between fiscal and monetary policy. The U.S. economy is starting to feel the impact of the tariffs and the global slowdown. I mean, especially this week. If you looked at some of the numbers that we saw this week, we saw GDP at 2.2%. And that was far lower than we've seen. And it looks like this continuation of this trend that we're seeing right now with the slowdown in the economics and possibly some concern about earnings is pretty solid. It's going to continue to build to the downside. Therefore, if you believe that there's a chance that the economic conditions will deteriorate and the possibility that there's earnings guidance that's going to fall short of expectations and a generally weak outlook by companies, what do you do? It's a conundrum. Because when we look back at the five lessons, we said, don't fight the Fed. But the Fed is now, a lot of people think reducing rates, but they're not. They're just stagnant, staying where they are. They're just, yeah, they're not moving. Fiscal policy is a drag right now. On a year-over-year basis, growth is going to slow down dramatically because of that big lift that we saw because of tax relief, tax cuts. And the global condition is slowing down. So on one hand, don't fight the Fed. Some are even thinking there's a chance for a rate cut before the next rate increase. So on the other hand, markets usually react to the Fed at the start and the end of a cycle. So that can be something to look at. So if you look back in time, you look back historically, and you look at when the times the Fed has changed course, oftentimes it's an initial reaction of the markets thinking the worst or the best. Then over time, as reality sets in, as we become much more comfortable and used to the idea of whatever that policy change has been, there's another reaction, depending on which way the move was. So for example, when we saw that rates started to go up, everybody's, you know, giving us that whole line that, yeah, it's really good because the economy's doing better, that whole thing we talked about. Markets continued to move higher, and there was some benefits primarily due to the fact that companies got a major tax relief. I think that did hold up values pretty well. That helped out dramatically those couple quarters. And as now that wore off and the Fed kept on raising rates, initially we were kind of happy about the whole market moving and everything was great and a couple of rate hikes. Then as it set in and people realized what happened, that's when they started rolling this thing down. Now, recently what we had was a Fed that changed direction again. They didn't change to the downside of starting to make cuts, but they said they're holding off, which in some people's mind is the same thing. Now, they make these cuts, or they make this, not the cuts, the change in direction, change in policy. So we saw how the markets reacted so violently to the upside. And now we're going to be in a situation where reality is going to set in. The reality of why they are changing their direction and what is the reasons for it. And then if they are right for why they did it, we're going to see the fruits of that decision or the underlying reasons why. And that would be a continued slowdown in the U.S., earnings slowdown, maybe even close to an earnings recession this quarter or next. So here's the thing. Maybe if you listen to what I'm saying to you, and we're talking about, and you're kind of believing some of the things we talk about, we look back on those five lessons that we learned over the last 6 months and take it to heart. Don't just throw it out there and say, oh, it was a crazy time and markets just gained back what they lost and it was a glitch in the system. But maybe it's time to consider getting ready ahead of time and have a well thought out plan of action. Well, what does that mean? I mean, all right, so I get it. This time we'll get ready. Listen, the expansion has been going on a while. The latest push from tax cuts have helped. But on the other side of the discussion, we know there's something brewing beneath the surface, don't you? Come on. Do you think it's just all, you know, rainbows and puppy dogs right now? There is something brewing beneath the surface. I talked about this GDP coming at 2.2% for the fourth quarter, down from 2.6% initial reading. We saw that was down from 4.2% the second quarter of 2018 and 3.4% in the third quarter. Manufacturing and factory conditions are slowing. Confidence is lower. Housing market is stagnant. And the list goes on. There's not much out there to suggest that we're going to see a massive benefit for GDP anytime soon. And with a global slowdown that's coming, they'll probably nick us over here and start to creep into our economy here. It's going to be an impact on earnings, especially those multinationals. Think about this. So again, whether this plays out as we suspect it will or not, do you have a plan? Do you have some kind of a plan that you can put into action that you know about? Now, one of the best ways to have and pretty much stick to a plan is to write it down. I know this is arcane. People maybe, what am I going to write it down with? I don't even have a pencil and paper anymore. All I have is my iPhone. All I have is my Samsung device. I'll put it in the notes. Do me a favor. Get a piece of paper. Get a pen. Write it down. Type it in Word and print it. Have it somewhere that's on regular paper, that's accessible and in your face. Keep it somewhere as a reference so that you don't make any stupid moves. I mean, that's what we're trying to accomplish here, right? Is to keep you from making bad decisions. And I'm telling you, this is something that I subscribe to. So you want to write down a couple things, as I see it right now. You want to write down what you're going to do if this condition or that condition plays out. Well, for example, if in fact we see that earnings are slowing down, we see the market start to roll over a bit, we see that a couple of your stocks get hit, what are you going to do? Are you going to, okay, it could be a lot of things. It could be, hey, you know what? I'm going to double down on them. I think that long-term these are just fine. Or you could say, you know, I got a 10% of position of this company or ETF or mutual fund in my portfolio. I'm going to cut it down in half, put that money aside for a little while, wait for the storm to pass, see if there's a better time to buy. At the same time, you also need to write down something else. This is really important. You need to write down what you're going to do if you're wrong. How will you self-correct if you're wrong? What will you do? So you have to look at this as a plan of action that maybe has some triggers. You know, if this, then that. If this happens, then I'll do this. It may be as simple as, you know, if a stock gets to be more than a 5% position in my portfolio, I'll pare it back. Or if a stock that I really like drops by 20%, maybe I'll add to that position. Just a simple rebalancing concept. Or it could be a more advanced. You could look at, you know, hey, I'm seeing that the economic conditions are slowing down. I see that the Fed is seeing something right here. I see that earnings are possibly a problem. And there's clearly a close as you can be to a recession in Europe, and China slowing down to 6.25% GDP. For them, that's slow. Japan is a disaster as it's always been. But you know what? There could be a lot of, a good amount of exposure to companies that I own in the international area because they sell there. And if that's the case and there's a slowdown over there, it's going to affect my companies. Whether you're an S&P 500 ETF buyer or you're buying individual stocks. Either way, you're going to be affected. Now, I'm not telling you this because I believe that we're imminently due for some kind of horrid, you know, massive correction. That's not what I'm talking about. This is not about necessarily a warning. It's preparation. Put it to another way. I'm down in Hurricane Alley down here. One of the things you know you want to do is always keep water on hand during hurricane season. A lot of other things too, but as an example, you want to keep water on hand. Why? If the hurricane comes, you're going to go try with a billion other people to go try to get water on shelves that have no water on them. You're too late. At that point, there's nothing you can do but beg your neighbor. That may work once or twice, but you know what? A little preparation. Having a few gallons of water in the house, stuck on the side, somewhere in your garage, your basement. We don't have basements down here, but in your garage, in a cabinet somewhere. Why not? It doesn't go bad. preparation. You take out those storm shutters, not during the storm, before the storm. Simple preparation. So I'm trying to give you some preparation for the future. Again, it may not happen right now, but then again, it may. But at least if you're prepared, if you have an action plan that's available for you, you're that much better off. Five key lessons that I think I learned also and solidified my understanding of a few things over the last 6 months. I do believe we're a little bit hot when it comes to markets right now. I think that there is a overconfidence that is built up dramatically by a lot of people with the whole Fed issue and the thought that this whole tariff thing is going to end with a just incredible deal. But we will wait to see with that. Moving along. There's an area that I've been watching. And I want to share this with you because it's about the impact that a few stocks have on markets. So, for example, in March, the S&P 500, just for the month, was up about 2%, give or take. And of that return, of that increase in the S&P 500, Apple accounted for about 17% of that gain. Amazon, 12%. Microsoft, 10%. If you add that up, the total from the three of those is about 30% of the total gains of the index. Taking it one step further, the technology sector was a 50% contributor to the gains in the S&P 500 for the month of March. Technically, if you take that out, take out the technology sector, which can't, but if you did take out the technology sector, markets would be flat. The S&P would be flat for the month. And obviously, you can't do that. I'm not saying that there were no gains anywhere else. There were. But consider that there was this massive amount of value that was added because of that. The movement of the index was attributable primarily to technology. And furthermore, 30% of the total index was attributable to three stocks. That's something that gets my attention. We know this because the way that the index is calculated, the S&P 500, is a market cap index. Therefore, the largest stocks have the greatest importance on the overall return of the index. But the reason that I'm looking at that situation specifically is that when there's a big move and a narrowing of the breadth, only certain companies are really participating in a big way to the gains, that makes me a little cautious. Now, so far, the breadth of the markets, not a big problem. We did see that pretty much, you know, the tide raised all ships in the last 3 months. We saw the same thing. The tide went out in October, November, December, and just sunk everything, right? But I want to keep an eye on this, and you should probably keep an eye on this too. And you do that through the advancers and decliners. And just watch to make sure that there is a good amount of participation in stocks as markets are moving higher. If the breadth thins out and the advancers start declining and we see the decliners start to pick up, but yet markets are not actually declining, if you understand what I'm saying here, right? So I'm saying is, markets are not declining, but underneath the surface, there's something going on. That is a time that I get really worried. We saw that in the mid part of last year. We've seen it before. And what happens is there's a flight to safety into the big names. They're pulling out of money out of other things. The algos, which is one of the mechanics that I talk about in this economic commentary coming up, are also doing their best to balance out the indices. So it looks like on the surface, there's not much going on, but underneath it, it's a mess. So keep an eye on that and watch for the breadth or the advancers decline line and how that looks in reference to the market itself, how the market is acting and how the advanced decline line is acting. All right, another thing. Take a deep breath with me, will you? I'm even going to take a little sip of water before I get into this next part, because I'm probably going to get all sorts of crap from people on this. And that's the people that are going to take this the wrong way, what I'm going to say, because I'm not talking about it. You'll see in a moment. I'm not talking about it in the way that may be necessarily objectionable, in my opinion, because we're not taking sides. Let me take the water first. Okay. So I want to take a journey outside of what we usually talk about. Kind of a sidebar here. Over the last week, I received some interesting calls from both friends and clients. And there's a few of them. And I think there was two or three in particular that really stuck out as an area that I the first one I listened to, whatever, the second one, but the third one I'm thinking, what's going on? And it relates to politics. All right, throw the bananas, throw the oranges, throw the tomatoes. I know, we don't want to talk about politics on the show, but I want to put this into perspective. And I think it's important to talk about for a second, because if I'm getting calls all of a sudden out of nowhere and the theme is the same on a topic that I did not bring up at all. In other words, ring, ring. Hi, Andrew. How are you? Hey, what's going on? Oh, my God. They start going into this thing. And all the calls had some of the basic themes. And it's that there's this stress building. The stress is rising. And psychologically, people are being, from these three calls, tortured by some of the things that are going on in the political world. I'm talking about straight up politics here. I'm not talking about Republican or Democrat, independent, or any other party. I'm not talking about putting a finger at fiscal policy. I'm talking about straight up politics. The name calling, the bullying, the political one-sidedness, the party line BS, the media bias. I think it's been taking a toll on a lot of people. Now, I can only relate this to you with the discussion of the people that I've talked with. I don't know how it's affecting you. I could also know how it's affecting me, but the people that I talk to seem to have they're almost having like a psychological break. And it was hard for me to understand. I was like, well, why are you taking this so personally? Again, I didn't ask them anything about politics. I didn't say, how's your week? Hey, you've been watching, blah, 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 blah. No. So over the last, in particular, the last few weeks, I think, and people have, seemingly reached a breaking point. I don't know if it was that they're scared or concerned or fed up, but here's my two cents on this whole thing. Hopefully to be a help if anybody's out there agonizing over politics. Politics has always been ugly. And more recently, well, it's always been ugly, and anytime you talk about it, it's always been the ugliest. So now we're at the ugliest point again. And it'll be uglier than it is now in the future. And it's getting progressively nasty and nastier over the years. I don't know if it's social media, if it's anger, frustration, or maybe even, dare I say, a reflection on us, a reflection of us, as we're allowing politicians to act this way, because we act by voting. They act any way they want, and we continue to put people in that have that kind of thread, that kind of demeanor. It doesn't matter what kind of politics that you believe in. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. But I got to tell you something, you probably hate the other one. It's become like a team rivalry to the worst degree ever. The whole idea of, yeah, I'm going to go across the aisle. Just saying, it's funny. I'm going to go across the aisle and work with my counterpart. That doesn't even exist anymore. If I'm a Democrat, I hate a Republican. If I'm a Republican, I hate you because you're a Democrat. So I don't know what the reason is. And again, maybe it's the completion of the Mueller report and the conclusion about it, which some are saying it was a total waste of time and nothing was found. And it totally exonerated the president and, you know, why we had to do this whole thing, you know, was a waste of time. Well, to be honest, from what I can see, which is nothing, which is what you can see too, there is nothing to see here because we do not have the results of the Mueller report except for what Attorney General Barr put out there, right? So what do we know? He put out something that says, okay, this is my opinion of it, but there's like 400 pages of all sorts of nonsense in there. We have no idea what actually is in that report and why so many convictions happened during the investigation. Unfortunately, we may never know anything about any of this. At the best, we'll get handed a fully redacted copy of this report that will continue to stir the pot in hyperbole. And we'll just go round and round because everybody will look at it from their perspective and say, oh, he's guilty of this. And the other, well, no, that didn't happen. Look at that. It doesn't matter either way. Here's the point. There's no reason to get so caught up in this. Whether you believe he's innocent or he's not, whether you believe that this guy should resign or not, whether you believe that this other fella or should go to jail, I don't really care. It doesn't have to consume you. And more importantly, if it consumes you, all right, fine, have at it. The thought that we have transparency is a farce. The information we get is so well crafted by whoever the sources of the perspective is. Don't get so caught up in all this is what I'm saying. Because you can't believe a lot of the stuff that's going on. Not that it's fake news or anything like that, because it's slanted. And here's the punchline. Don't let any of your panic, your nervousness, your anger, your directives, your thoughts on any of this spill over to your financial decisions or actions. Don't do it. That's why I'm going through all this. It's not to talk about the politics. It's to talk about the psychology of how it's affecting you and to plead with you not to let it spill over into your investment decisions. If you want to get emotional about this, you want to get totally attached to the politics, again, great. But keep it isolated from your money. I mean, we've seen time and time again that politics, not fiscal policy, separate that, politics, has been dirty, nasty, and divisive. We know that. But yeah, there are times that stocks will react to political issues, but again, you got to separate political issues and fight the urge to combine it with fiscal policy. I mean, does that make sense? Keep your portfolio away from this emotion. Pay attention to fiscal policy and how that may actually impact your investments and your portfolio. But again, it doesn't necessarily matter. The politics of who's saying what to who and how this one reacted is as happy as you are about it or as miserable as you are about it, doesn't necessarily impact your portfolio. I went around and around a little bit on that, but hopefully that was cohesive enough that my point will be well taken. Now, if you tell me that I'm wrong, I'd love to hear it. If you say, no, you know, I'm this political side and this is why this should affect my money. Oh, you know, I'm a Republican and, you know, the Democrats, if they got into the office, the stock market would drop. It's not about whether they get in or not. It's about the fiscal policy that they put into place. Just remember that. Now, is it the thought that if the Democrats come into office that they will jack up spending? Yeah. Cause all sorts of ballooning deficits? Mm-hmm. Take away social service, give back to social services and tax the rich. Mm-hmm. Pretty much that's what the Republicans did, except for the last part of that. And markets still went up. So remember, maybe the person saying it is maybe of the other side of the equation. And we can go back and forth on either side. And I can make a case why the market should go up or down, depending on whatever. It doesn't matter. And if you're going to be sitting there right now thinking, oh my God, this Horowitz, what a moron. Of course, if the blah, blah, blah party gets in, it's going to be better for the markets. It's fiscal policy. It's not the politician that is in there. It is their fiscal policy that they can implement along with the various branches of government. It is not necessarily the party. It's the fiscal policy results. There is a separation of that that needs to be looked at. Don't get caught up in the rah-rah, sis-boom-ba of your parties, your love of your party, or the hatred of the other party. Focus on the fiscal policy, and then moreover, really put that aside too. Focus on earnings. Focus on the economy. That's what you want to look at. All right, Fridays at 9 a.m., TradeStation has asked me to host the morning market briefing. So we do a review of markets, what's hot, what's going on, what the daily issues are. I look back at some themes of the week. We go through a lot of good stuff between 9 and 9:30, the money, a quick down and dirty. On the show notes for episode number 606, there is a link so you can register for that. The last thing I want to discuss is a couple things. Economics, big week of data coming up. And, of course, earnings are going to be starting on the week of the 12th of April. So we'll be going to be discussing that. Go over to Ask Andrew on thedisciplinedinvestor.com and ask any questions you have as well or give me some feedback. Please do me a favor. If you're just going to punch me because I mentioned the word politics, please don't. I mean, you can if you want, but there's no point. Now, if you argue with me about, you know, the whole discussion I just had about that, that's great. Maybe, you know, look at some of the other points we talk about as well. But if it's all about just my team's better than your team, I'm not interested in hearing about it. Because, you know, I'm not coming from one side or the other on this discussion. It's all about your money. Let's talk about, and I'm not going to apologize anymore. So there you go. All right, let's see here. All right, quickly, before we end, I want to talk about next week's economic data. We have Monday starting off, big week. We have retail sales at 8:30 in the morning. Expectations are for a rise of 0.1%. Business inventories are going to be coming out, seeing a little bit of a rise in that expected. We have at 10 o'clock also on Monday, the ISM manufacturing number for the month of March. And I think we're going to see a bit of a decline in that. Expectations are for 54. Construction spending, auto sales, and truck sales also coming out. Tuesday, durable goods orders will be coming out. We'll see about a drop. Expected to be about 1% from about a plus 0.4% last month. On Wednesday, we're going to see the ISM non-manufacturing number. Now, this usually goes right along with sentiment, which has been dropping a little bit. Expectations are to see the service sector, you know, in the 58 range. We'll see how that plays. We're also going to see the ADP employment numbers, expectations for about 160,000 additions. Thursday, initial claims, continued claims. Friday's the big day. Ding, ding, ding. Got non-farm payrolls. Expectations for about 100, for non-farm, about 180,000. Remember, we had that 20,000 just number, which was really weird last month. And expectations of that to just come right back up and be in line with what we've seen the trend be so far. I don't see any reason why we won't go back to trend. That was something very odd going on there. Unemployment rate is expected to be 3.8%, in line with where it's been as well. So there you go. Okay. Now, hopefully we'll get this mixing thing set up. Hopefully this sounds okay. It looks like it's okay on our system that we're recording this on. But in the meantime, again, if you have any questions, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if you're interested in our portfolio management services, you can find that out there too. Investology, TDI Managed Growth Strategy, Global Allocations, all on there ready to discuss. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.